I'll call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 3:01 p.m. on Tuesday, May 13th, 2025. And present today, we have Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum, Representative Co-Chair Schrage, Representative Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. We do have three bills before the committee this afternoon. These are three bills that are known as the single subject bills that were taken up last year and were passed out last year. And we're going to have Megan Wallace come before us to talk a little bit about that. But just to kind of lay out what the plan is, we'll first hear SB 95, then 96, and then 97. And Senate Bill 95 is the Child Care Assistance and Grants. We'll hear from the sponsor, review the fiscal notes, take invited public testimony, and if it's the will of the committee, we'll move the bill. It's the same thing, same ordering for the Child Care Tax Credits Bill. That's Senate Bill 96. And again, the same thing for Senate Bill 97, which is the Big Game Guide Permit Program. And so before we get into the discussion on the bills, I would like to have before us Ms. Megan Wallace, who I believe is online, must be online. And she is going to talk about the single subject lawsuit. And so Ms. Wallace, if you could put yourself on the record and maybe talk us through that.
Certainly. For the record, this is Megan Wallace, Chief Counsel with Legal Services. As the chair mentioned, the three bills before you today were part of SB 189, which was passed and enacted into law last session by the 33rd Alaska Legislature. Those bills took effect and are in law, but last fall, SB 189, the passage of that bill was challenged by former Representative David Eastman in a lawsuit filed against the state of Alaska. The lawsuit alleges that passage of SB 189 violated the single subject rule under Article 2, Section 13 of the Alaska Constitution, which provides that all bills shall be confined to a single subject. The Alaska Supreme Court has generally held that the single subject rule requires matters in a bill to fall under some general idea and or be so connected or related to each other, either logically or in popular understanding, be germane to one single subject. And so that lawsuit alleges that the contents of that bill do not meet that standard. The bills before you would have essentially the effect of reenacting the provisions already passed in SB 189. And the passage of these bills, the outcome would essentially be twofold. First, if SB 189 were to be struck down by the court, repassage of these bills would ensure that there's no gap between the law being struck down and the legislature acting. In other words, repassage of these bills would mean that whatever happened in court would not have any effect on the provisions contained in these bills. The passage of these bills also may have the possibility of being construed or by the court as curative legislation. And curative legislation has been upheld by the Alaska Supreme Court in other contexts and in other states to cure the single subject issue where the legislature cures the alleged defect by reenacting the legislation. And if the legislature reenacts these bills, the state may be able to argue that the lawsuit is moot and give the court the opportunity to dismiss the lawsuit on those grounds. And so that may be another benefit to passing that legislation. With that, that's just a general overview. Getting to the status of the lawsuit. So as I mentioned, the lawsuit was filed in fall of 2024. The plaintiff has filed a motion for summary judgment, and in response, the state had requested that the court stay the litigation for the duration of the legislative session to give the legislature the opportunity to consider repassage of the provisions. Today, however, there was an order from the Superior Court denying that motion for stay, so the case will continue on summary judgment. The state has been ordered to respond to the summary judgment motion filed by the plaintiff within 15 days of the order. So my math, I think that comes out to May 28th, which will be after the legislature adjourns from its regular session. I suspect that there will be a motion for oral argument on the summary judgment motions, and then once it's fully briefed and right, the court will issue a decision on the merits of the SB 189 litigation. And with that, I think that's the general overview, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Great. Thank you very much. Ms. Wallace, just want to recognize that we also are joined by Representative Stapp, and also I believe Senator Dunbar and Wilikowski are here for bill presentations, but also wanted to note that we have in the audience Representative Cologne, Representative Fields. I think I've got everybody covered, so just appreciate your being here. So we do have some questions. Also, I just want to note that we do have some of our conference committee conferees that need to leave at 4:30, so just so folks know. So I'll be ending at that point. And I saw one hand come up. Did I see other hands come up? Okay. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Wallace, do you have any opinion about whether curative legislation can be altered such that it doesn't impact the efficacy of the cure? In other words, it wouldn't undermine an attempt to moot the litigation.
Ms. Wallace?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the issue has not, to my knowledge, been specifically litigated in the Alaska Supreme Court, and so I can't really tell you exactly what that line is. If the legislature's goal and passage of these bills is to hopefully get a ruling that the lawsuit is moot because we've simply reenacted and cured the alleged violation, then my advice would be that the bills largely go unamended and true to the provisions that were in SB 189. Otherwise, there's a risk that the court would look at these as just new bills and not necessarily relevant to the SB 189 litigation. On the other hand, if the legislature's goal is largely just to make sure that there's no impact on the provisions of law that were enacted in SB 189, then the risk of amending or altering those provisions is less important, depending on, again, what really the goal of the legislature is.
Representative Josephson.
In other words, if we have independent, unrelated reasons to reform a bill that had been part of 189, and found the lawsuit immaterial to any of that, then it's sort of falls under a completely different analysis, right?
Ms. Wallace?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. As a matter of law and legislative prerogative, the legislature can change and amend and pass whatever bills the legislature is inclined to do. And so if there are policy reasons, or maybe the will of this legislature is different than the will of the last legislature, the legislature from a legal perspective is free to make whatever changes that it wants to the bills and to the provisions that are contained therein. If the matter of curing the pending litigation is of the utmost importance to the legislature in considering these measures, then the less they are amended, the more likely, in my opinion, the court is to find them to be curative and potentially able to moot the pending litigation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Ms. Wallace, so we have how many bills, I guess, in 189 that we need to cure?
Ms. Wallace.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, there are currently pending four bills that contain all of the provisions that were in SB 189. So those are the three bills before you today, in addition to SB 80, that is not before the committee today.
Okay. Representative Tomaszewski.
Follow up. So thank you. So what happens if we do we need to cure all four, or could we cure three, and that basically leaves the one as SB 189 from last year, or do we have to do all four of them?
Ms. Wallace?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski. In order, if the goal is to have the best chance to dismiss the litigation, then you would need to pass all four, because the legal theory would be that passage of all four would cure all of the provisions that were contained in SB 189. Now, if the legislature only passes three of those bills, there is still a benefit to reenactment of those three bills, because the risk is that if SB 189 gets struck down by the court, there is a good chance that the entire bill, and so all of the provisions in that piece of legislation, would be invalidated. And so passage of even just a portion of what was included in SB 189 would mitigate the consequence of those provisions being validated. So, for example, you know, there's some board extensions, tax credits. There's other things that may be in a state of, you know, uncertainty if the provisions were invalidated. And so passage or reenacting these provisions would just mitigate the consequences if a court decides to strike down SB 189.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you. And just as one last follow-up here. So the consequences you speak of, is it just simply that SB 189 is struck down and all provisions thereof, or are there other consequences, monetary, any kind of other consequences that could transpire from the court striking down this litigation?
Ms. Wallace?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, I was speaking mostly to the consequence of the provisions being invalidated. There are other consequences if the if the provisions were invalidated by the court, and so those might be, you know, in Alaska under Civil Rule 82, the prevailing party is entitled to attorney's fees, and so there may be some attorney's fees that are awarded if the plaintiff prevails, and then there's also you know, something for maybe the legislature just to be aware of is that if the matter does make it to the Alaska Supreme Court, there's maybe some uncertainty in the sense that if there's a negative ruling on single subject, there's a potential that the legislative discretion that currently exists in terms of deciding what is considered a single subject could be diminished. There is a decent amount of jurisprudence on single subject, and so in my opinion, that consequence is not as significant probably as the uncertainty as to what would happen if these provisions were invalidated.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Just want to clarify, earlier I mentioned that we would adjourn at 4:30. That's actually when conference committee starts, so we'll actually adjourn at 4:20. So that gives us about an hour. Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. let me try that again. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to Ms. Wallace. Yeah, not a legal person, unlike our other co-chair, but I'm curious about the onus of the lawsuit is over the single subject rule, correct, through the chair?
Ms. Wallace?
Through the chair, Representative Staff, that's correct.
Default, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up.
So hypothetically, and I don't know if you can answer this at all, if the court basically rules in a way that invalidates that single subject rule, like what would the implications be of our process here through the legislature, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the immediate consequence is if the court invalidates SB 189, the provisions that had been in law would be invalidated. And so the legislature would have to decide whether it wants to act to reenact those provisions or take it some other action to basically fill in the gaps of where the law has been struck down. And it's a little, I don't want to speculate as to what how the court might decide in this matter or what kind of case law might come down, but for the most part, up until now, the Alaska Supreme Court has given the legislature a lot of discretion in terms of allowing a pretty broad interpretation of legislation, you know, fitting into a single subject. But the rule is stated in the Alaska Constitution, so I'm not sure if the decision would have significant impact on the legislature or not.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Kutcher.
Representative Staff.
So, through the chair, would a severability like arise at all? Because in my mind, again, I don't know much about the law. That's why we have Co-Chair Josephson over there. But in my mind, like, you know, every time I read a court case, they always cite this thing called severability, where they just strike down what they foresee as the, like, unconstitutional portion of the bill as opposed to all the things in the bill entirety. Would that be at play here as well, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the severability is likely not at play in a single subject case, and that's part of the the seriousness of a single subject issue is because the court is unlikely to decide essentially which provision made the legislation in violation of the single subject rule. And the reason for that is the court would be in a position to have to essentially guess which provisions were more important than the other ones. And so instead of being able to carve up and say, you know, we're going to create this one subject and then all the provisions that don't fit in that subject, we're just going to strike those down. What has typically happened in other states is that the courts have struck down the entire measure. And so that is the significant risk here, is that the court won't be able to sever or save any of the provisions, and that it'll invalidate the entire act.
Okay, follow-up.
Representative Stout.
Thank you, Coach Foster. Just so I understand that, that makes sense to me, although I want to say when they did the whole ballot initiative for ballot measure 2 thing, they struck down a bunch of the provisions in the ballot measure, and they still left the ballot measure on the ballot. Is that, like, materially different because we're the legislature and we're talking about a bill here than what they ruled on that through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the ballot initiative case was the first instance in which the Alaska Supreme Court had found a violation of the single subject issue, and so we haven't seen a matter passed by the legislature have to go through the same exercise, and so it's just difficult to speculate exactly what would happen, and that's, there's certainly maybe a possibility that the court would, you know, find a subject for parts of the bill and, you know, save those and sever the ones that don't fit in that. But in my opinion, it's probably more likely that the entire act would be at risk for invalidation.
And just one last follow-up, and then I think we're done.
Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. It makes sense to me, Ms. Wallace. I just... The only thing that I know that I've heard from the court regarding single subject rule, at least in recent memory, is that case on that ballot initiative. And I want to say they only cut parts of it, and they still, well, clearly we have it in law now because the voters passed it. So I guess I don't know why it would be any different if they looked at our own bills that we just passed and just kicked out the provisions that they didn't like. But again, not a lawyer, so thanks.
Okay. I assume no comments, Ms. Wallace.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything additional to add.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I don't see any further questions, so thank you very much, Ms. Wallace. I would like to also recognize that we have with us Representative Jimmy. And to clarify again on conference committee, rather than adjourning, if we need to extend out, what we'll do is we'll recess. And there is conference committee at 4:30. There is also another meeting at 5:15, so it's possible that that goes from 5:15 to maybe 6:15, and we may come back if we need to. So just want to put that on folks' radar. So with that, let's jump into the first bill. That's Senate Bill 95, Child Care Assistance and Grants. If we could have Senator Dunbar and his staff, Arielle Wiggin, if you could please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and introduce the bill. Also, we have available for questions from the Department of Health, Leah Van Kirk. Once we do the introduction of the bill, and we also have Ms. Sonia Kawasaki here as well, once we do the introduction, then we're going to go to the single invited testimony, and then we'll take up public testimony, and then we'll take up the fiscal notes, and then from there we will entertain questions. And so with that, welcome Senator Dunbar again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Forrest Dunbar, Senator from District J. I'm here in my capacity as the chair of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, which is carrying this bill. I think Ms. Wallace actually sort of said most of what I was going to say. The underlying substance of this bill is that it expands child care to about 18,000 kids. It came out of the governor's child task force on child care recommendations. But the fundamental reason it's before you is because of the single subject rule lawsuit. This is already in the law. We are giving it an independent sort of status in case that lawsuit strikes it down. It's already built into the House version of the budget. I hope it will survive conference committee. So really what we're doing here is reenacting a portion of SB 189 in the hopes that we can moot the lawsuit and give this an independent basis in the law. So with that, if there are questions about the underlying substance or policy, which again is already part of the law, was already passed by the last legislature, I would defer them to Ms. Berglund from Thread, who's online. And then if there are further legal questions, we also have Ms. Kawasaki, the Senate Majority Legal Counsel here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So we'll go over to Ms. Stephanie Berglund. If you could put yourself on the record, state your name and your affiliation, and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee, for hearing SB 95. My name is Stephanie Berglund. I'm the CEO of Thread, Alaska's statewide child care resource and referral organization. Thread's a 39-year-old nonprofit providing services statewide to strengthen access to affordable and high-quality early childhood education with focus on child care. We serve more than 12,000 families, 2,000 early educators, and over 400 early childhood education programs each year. The child care sector is fragile. It's long been a sector with institutional deficiencies for decades, but has seen increased challenges over the last 5 years. Since 2020, we've seen over 25% of the licensed child care programs close across the state, and those that are open, they're not able to serve all the children they would like to due to staff shortages. The child care workforce is struggling due to low wages and few benefits at the same time when there's high competition for qualified workers in Alaska. In a recent report from Child Care Aware of America, Alaska is listed as well behind in both state investments in childcare and our efforts to recover childcare access post-pandemic. Currently, fewer families can access affordable and quality childcare services than ever before. When we don't have a strong childcare sector, we see our economic infrastructure struggle. Businesses are not able to recruit and retain quality employees, and families are not able to participate in the workforce as they want. Our most recent research and data conducted in partnership with the Alaska Chamber and the McKinley Group has shown that businesses are greatly impacted by families struggling with childcare, including poor attendance and loss in productivity. Childcare challenges for working families result in absences and employee turnover that cost businesses an estimated $152 million annually. When Alaskans can't work, they don't have the financial security to support their families. They aren't able to achieve their self-sufficiency goals and aren't able to contribute to our economy. This not only stifles the quality of life for families, but this also stalls Alaska's growth. SB 95 adds needed support for childcare and strengthens the childcare systems and subsidy programs. While there are many areas of the childcare system that need support, SB 95 aims to strengthen childcare assistance by allowing more families, those earning up to the 105th percentile of medium household income, to participate in the program and creating flexibility in child care resources, all with aim to support child care programs with the targeted supports they need. Changes in child care assistance are needed. Currently, too few families participate in the program and they don't qualify or can't access resources under the current structure. A change that can help is through SB 95 and increasing child care assistance access and capping co-payments required for families. The bill will allow more families to qualify for assistance and thus allow more families access to the quality child care they need. These and other barriers are impacting families' ability to participate in the workforce. In a 2023 family survey, just over half of families, that's 51%, report that their household members' ability to be employed or work more hours was impacted by quality, availability, or cost of child care. That's a huge change from the same survey we conducted in 2019, where only 22% of families surveyed reported that childcare barriers are impacting their ability to be employed. That's a 29% increase in families not being able to work due to childcare issues. These findings underscore the need for child care change to strengthen our collective workforce and economy. This bill will also create a program to partner with businesses to create incentives and support them with developing on-site or near-site child care. Additionally, child care businesses are currently reimbursed at a child care assistance program rates that are set by a market rate survey. That's based on the amount child care businesses charge for child care, not what it actually costs to provide quality care and education. This creates an unstable foundation for the child care system. New data shows us a gap in what the state's paying in reimbursement to the true cost of providing care. We're encouraged to see that the bill includes the option for the cost of care to be used in conjunction with market rate prices in policy and fiscal planning for child care support. Considering the true cost of providing child care in our policies will inform a more stable child care system. THRED is endorsing SB 95 as it is a key step toward more affordable access to care for families. THRED encourages all legislators to consider and pass this bill this session. While we just heard how complex this has gotten, I ask you to keep it as simple as possible in order to move this important legislation forward, recognizing that it was already passed with strong support last session. SB 95 is a great and necessary step for supporting families' affordability, and this bill includes the fiscal note already included in the governor's budget. We appreciate the governor's support for child care over the last few years, in addition to policymakers' focus on this important issue. Positive change for child care cannot come soon enough. I appreciate the sponsor for bringing this bill forward and thank the co-chairs and committee for considering this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for your time and support for young children and families in Alaska.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Berglund. We'll come back to questions here in just a moment. We'll go through public testimony, the single fiscal note, and then we'll come back to questions. So I'm going to open public testimony on SB 95. And if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who would like to testify? And I think Ms. Berglund is our single testifier today. So we'll go ahead and close public testimony on SB 95. That's the Child Care Assistance and Grants. And again, if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And so with that, we'll go over to the fiscal note. Mr. Brody Anderson, if you could please come up and walk us through the fiscal note.
For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Before the Finance Committee today, you have a fiscal note for SB 95 from the Department of Health. The appropriation is public assistance. The allocation is child care benefits, OMB component 1897, control code WFISZ. Before the committee members, you'll notice that that this fiscal note is reflected in the governor's FY26 requested budget and is reflected as following. In personal services, there's $203,800. In services, $28,000. In commodities, $2,000. In grants and benefits, $5,858,400 for a total appropriation of $6,092,200. Out of that, $225,100 are federal receipts. $225,100 are UGF match. And then the rest of the appropriation of $5,642,000 is unrestricted general funds for the grand total stated above. This bill will create two new positions. And also the department reflects that there will be regulations that will need to be reviewed. If you turn to the second page, you'll notice that the personal services creates those two new employees reflected towards the bottom of the page. services are once again $14,000 per person for those core services that are required for those positions. Commodities equal about $2,000 annually, and the grants will go $216,500 to support the grantee's staffing. Mr. Chairman, that summarizes the fiscal note for SB 95.
Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead and go to questions, whether that be for the bill or the fiscal note. And also on the fiscal note, we have available Ms. Leah Van Kirk. She's the policy advisor at the Department of Health. She can also help to answer questions on the fiscal note. And then any questions that we might have for the invited testifier, which was Ms. Berglund. So with that, any questions of the committee? Representative Tomaszewski and Joseph.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, how is a range 12 $83,000 a year?
Mr. Anderson?
Through the chair, for the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. I will take the initial stab at that and then maybe have some finer details provided by Ms. Van Kirk. That $83,000 annually includes their base salary and then also any health care and or benefits that are included beyond that. So you have the PCN salary plus benefit package is what is the total.
And Ms. Van Kirk, if you've got any additional comments, if you could just put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Chair Foster. For the record, Leah Van Kirk, Healthcare Policy Advisor for the Department of Health. Yes, that is correctly articulated, that $83,700 annually does include wages and benefits. So that's an accurate amount for that position at a range 12.
A follow-up.
Follow-up.
So what is that per hour, the range 12? And I'll ask the same on the range 18.
Ms. Van Kirk?
For the record, Leah Van Kirk, Healthcare Policy Advisor for the Department of Health. I would have to look up the hourly rate wage based on the pay scale. I can do that if you'd like to give me a moment.
And if you need more time, Ms. Van Kirk, we can go to the next question and come back to you.
For the record, Leah Van Kirk, Department of Health, to Chair Foster. The annual rate for a range, or excuse me, the hourly rate for range 12 is $24.15 per hour.
Okay. And
at a set in Juneau.
And then for the, I believe, range, was it 18, Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
For the other one, Ms. Kirk, what's that one come out to?
And for a range, for the record, Leah Van Kirk, to Chair Foster. The hourly rate for range 18 is $36.30 per hour.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on the list, I've got Representative Josephson and then Allard. Representative Josephson?
Yes. Actually, a question for Ms. Berglund. Just real quick, if we could, Ms. Berglund. I'm remembering that there was federal dollars of $29 million associated with child care. That's gone. And first, I guess part one is, am I right that there was $29 million? Perhaps from a federal source. And so now the state is down to mostly this bill, and then in the health, rather the House version of the operating budget, there's $7.7 million in child care workforce dollars, and finally there's the child care tax credit. Am I right about those things, that federal investment is gone for whatever reason, and we're down to state? Mostly, I see this other $225,000, but mostly state dollars.
Ms. Berglund?
For
Ms. Berglund, are you still there? Maybe. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. My line's now unmuted. For the record, this is Stephanie Berglund, CEO of Thread. And thank you for the question through the chair, Representative Josephson. I think what you might be referring to is through three different congressional appropriations of COVID relief dollars. There was a large investment to support stabilizing child care across Alaska. I don't have the exact dollars of that in front of me, but you are correct that all of those have been exhausted. Child care overall in Alaska is primarily federally funded and is needing additional state investment. So that's really where Thread's advocacy is leaning into multiple areas, like you mentioned, ongoing child care operating grants and supporting the child care workforce, in addition to all of the elements of both SB 95 and SB 96.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Vellard.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I don't know who could answer it, probably Hess, who's on the line. My question is, I thought we had quite a few vacancies that we've gone over in Hess, and I was just wondering why is it they want to add two more positions instead of perhaps using the vacancies that are already there?
Ms. Van Kirk.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, for the record, Leah Van Kirk, Department of Health. This is a new program, and so it requires new positions. The Division of Public Assistance is absolutely needing to utilize all of the positions that are allocated based on their workflow and their areas of focus. The Child Care Program Office is separate from that and has a low vacancy rate.
Representative Allard?
Just to reiterate, thank you, Co-Chair. So to reiterate what you said there's just no vacancies in this particular division that you're going to be accessing, correct? And then that's why you needed the new positions?
Ms. Van Kirk.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, Leah Van Kirk, Department of Health. There's a low vacancy rate in the Child Care Program Office. We have assessed the PCN needs in the Child Care Program Office to administer the needs. Because this is a new program, new PCNs are required to operate it.
Okay, I'll do a follow-up later. Thank you very much.
Do we have any further questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none. Senator Dunbar, do you have anything else to add before I entertain a motion?
No, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing this bill.
Okay. Okay. Representative Schrage, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move Senate Bill 95, Work Order 34-LS0446/A, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Do we have any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 95, which is 34-LS0446/A, is moved out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And if folks could please sign the committee report. Thank you very much, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll pass the committee report around here in a moment, but we'll jump right into the next bill, and that is Senate Bill 96. That's the Child Care Tax Credits. And I'd like to invite up Senator Wilikowski as well as his staff, Ms. Sonia Kawasaki. If you could put yourselves on the record. We also have available online Deputy Director Brandon Spanos of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. And just as we did on the last bill, we will jump right into invited testimony after the introduction, and then we'll take public testimony, review the fiscal notes, and then if it's the will of the committee, I'll entertain a motion. So with that, I think there might be a sunset question we might have for Ms. Wallace. So we'll go to the introduction first. Senator Wilikowski, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage, joined by Sonia Kawasaki, attorney for the Senate Majority. I won't rehash what you've spent a great deal of time very thoroughly analyzing the legal aspects of this issue. I would just on this particular bill, it expands the current education tax credit, which has a $3 million limit to child care, by creating a child tax credit for employers who incur child care expenditures. That could be in the form of cash, equipment, direct payments to employees. And there is a concern that has arisen in recent days, given our deteriorating fiscal situation, about the cost of this bill. And unlike the previous other components that you've analyzed, which have discrete fiscal limits, this one really has none. And it could potentially cost the state millions of dollars in lost revenue. It could potentially cost the state tens of millions of dollars in lost revenue. And if just the 20 largest employers in the state took full advantage of this, at $3 million apiece, that would be a hit to our treasury of $60 million. So the other concerns that have arisen are that there's no definition of child care. It may not be limited to licensed child care services. It could be used for babysitters, could be used for family members. There's no mechanism to track how employees spend the money. And there's a broad definition that could lead to unintended increased use of the credits. And so I think it's important to pass this bill, Mr. Chairman. My one suggestion, which I would offer to you that you may want to consider, is maybe putting a little closer sunset, just so that we can keep a little better track of the expenses going on in light of the deteriorating fiscal situation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. So we'll take up questions as soon as we go through invited testimony, public testimony, and the fiscal notes. So invited testimony, we've got Blue Schibler, Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Association for the Education of Young Children. And Ms. Schibler, if you could put yourself on the record and give us your thoughts.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Blue Schibler. I'm the Executive Director of the Association for Education of Young Children. We're a nonprofit organization serving families and supporting child care providers throughout the Southeast region for the past 40 years. And I'm calling today with strong support of SB96. The shortage of child care in Alaska is definitely a complex problem, and it needs innovative solutions from multiple partners, including the state, municipalities, and definitely the business sector. And my work in Juneau has allowed me to engage in supporting the growth of child care programs, and I've really seen tremendous interest from the business sector in being part of the solution. They're just really looking for a concrete way to do that. And so SB 96 will incentivize investment from corporate taxpayers to help expand access to child care and move our economy forward, allowing more parents to work. And I actually would like to share a real-life potential example of impact that this could have. My organization recently purchased a piece of land in Juneau, and we're in the early planning stages of building a large-scale child care center. It's designed to meet the current demand of childcare in Juneau, but also we see it as support and infrastructure to make Juneau ready for the Coast Guard icebreaker that will eventually be homeported there. This project is going to be expensive, and we have, since last year when this bill was first introduced, we have had and maintained a handful of corporations in our region that are very interested in contributing to this project. They've been tracking this bill closely. So we really need this bill to pass this session. We can break down our new child care center and hopefully see that happen across the state with other support for child care programs. I really hope that this committee can help make that happen. Thanks for taking my comments today.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Schibler. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on Senate Bill 96, and that is the child care tax credits. And if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@ak leg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone online who would like to testify? And I don't think there is. Okay, so we'll go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 96. And one more time, if folks wanted to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. We'll jump right over to the fiscal notes, and then we'll take questions, talk a little bit about the sunset dates. So with that, Mr. Brody Anderson, if you could again come up and walk us through. It looks like we have three fiscal notes. We also do have online available for questions regarding fiscal notes. Heather Carpenter, Deputy Director of Commerce. Dan Robinson, Chief of Labor Research and Analysis over Department of Labor. And Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director over at the Department of Revenue. So with that, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Before the committee today is three fiscal notes for SB 96, starting with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, appropriation, insurance operations, allocation is also insurance operations, OMB component 354, control code HJGOR. Before the committee is a fiscal note that reflects a zero fiscal note from the insurance operations. It reflects zero. They have no regulation changes. The bill does state that there is a sunset provision to January 1, 2028 for the insurance premium tax, corporate tax income, all the tax credits. Currently, the sunset is for January 1st, 2029. The bill changes it from January 1st, 2028. The sunset provision is the portion that Senator Wilikowski has been referencing. Also, because of the fact that there has been continuing changes to those tax collections and things over the last 3 years, that they don't anticipate any. They can anticipate negligible loss in revenue due to the additional cost of this legislation. Mr. Chairman, that summarizes fiscal note for insurance operations. The next one is from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The appropriation is the commissioners and admin administrative services. The allocation is labor market information from OMB component number 336. Control code ZDZUQ. That also reflects a zero fiscal note with no revenue changes and no required regulation changes. Finally, the final fiscal note is from the Department of Revenue, Appropriation, Tax and Treasury. Division is Tax Division, OMB Component 2476, Control Code MGBN9P, excuse me, BNP, not the number. This also reflects a zero fiscal note with fiscal note change of indeterminate in the years for FY28 and FY29. And that summarizes the fiscal note for the tax division. And that summarizes all of the fiscal notes for this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Just would like to also note that we have in the audience here regarding OMB component 354, Ms. Lori Wing Heyer here in the audience. Thanks for joining us. She's with the Division of Insurance, the director. So we've got the fiscal notes, we've got public testimony, invited testimony, so we'll take it back to questions, and maybe the first issue was the sunset, and maybe wanted to get Senator Wilikowski's thoughts on that, and then we can also go to Ms. Wallace if needed. Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, just, yeah, this bill's been rushed through from right from the very beginning. It was rushed through the Senate. We should have caught it in the Senate. We didn't. Every now and then the Senate doesn't get it right. But I think it might be worth considering shortening that sunset. So that's maybe at the end of this year.
Okay. Ms. Wallace, any thoughts on the sunset? and moving that up and how that might affect things?
Through for the record, again, this is Megan Wallace, Chief Counsel with Legal Services. As I had mentioned or testified earlier, the consequence of amending the legislation is really a policy call for the legislature to decide. If the bill is amended and the court views it as a new policy piece of legislation as opposed to a purely curative one, there is risk that it wouldn't be viewed as a court as sufficient to moot the litigation. But again, it's really the matter is for the legislature to decide what the priority is with passage and reenactment of this legislation, and we don't have any definitive case law to assess whether, you know, amending the bill as it's going through the process the second time would take it out of the curative category or not. So it's hard to say either way.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have questions of the committee? Representative Stout?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I would just, based on the explanation, and probably lean toward the not amending, if we could. Thanks.
Okay. Further questions, comments? Take a brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 4:01 p.m. And Ms. Kawasaki, if you could put yourself on the record and maybe tell us a little bit about the difference in the sunsets that are currently out there, and then we'll go to questions from Representative Shragi and Representative Bynum. So with that, Ms. Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Sonia Kawasaki, Senate Majority Legal Counsel. The question is how the sunset clause in the current bill applies to the current bill, as well as the education tax credits that exist in law separately from the child care tax credits. The education tax credits and the enacted SB 189 child care tax credits are subject to a sunset of January 1, 2028, which is on page 5, line 6, line 17 of SB 96. And that sunset currently would apply to both the education tax credits and the child care tax credits. So if the committee entertains an amendment on the sunset for that would apply only to the child care tax credits, we would have to account for that.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I think this is a question for Chief Counsel Wallace. So in considering sunset dates for this legislation for the child care tax credits, what is the soonest practical date that we could set the sunset to and have it work with the current bill structure, the effective date, and any other considerations that I may be missing?
Ms. Wallace.
Hello, this is Megan Wallace, Chief Counsel Legal Services. I'm actually going to refer your question to or Emily Nauman, who should also be on the line. She has been involved with the tax credit part of this legislation and is probably better suited to answer your question.
Ms. Nauman, can you put yourself on the record?
Sure. For the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair to Representative Shragi, your question was about effective dates and what the shortest effective date could potentially be.
Not quite right, Ms. Nauman. My question is if I wanted to sunset this child care tax credit program as soon as possible, what is the soonest that I could sunset the program?
Ms. Nauman?
Yes, excuse me. Sorry, I misspoke. I meant to say sunset date. Again, through the chair, Section 16 of this bill makes the changes to the education tax and child care tax credits retroactive to July 23rd, 2024, which was the date that SB 124 was passed. And I think the intention was, by my recollection, is I have that bill in front of me. That those child care tax credits would take effect that day. So it would really depend if you were interested in having some notion of how much, how many credits are claimed. I would say you would need to give this bill a full year. Corporations pay tax on their own tax years, so many start January 1st, but many pay taxes on some other annual cycle that doesn't start January 1st. But that's really a policy call. The department might have more insight on the cycle of how people claim tax credits, but in general, corporations are paying tax credits on and many of the entities listed on the list of taxes against which you can apply this tax, pay tax on the calendar year. And to that, I would say you would need a full year to really understand how much these credits will be used.
Follow up. So if I were to propose a sunset date of, just throwing an example out there, September 1st, and companies had already earned tax credits under this program at the beginning of this year, say in the first quarter, and then this program sunsetted in September, they would not be able to use those tax credits when they go to pay their taxes at the end of the year if that's the cycle they're on? Is that how it would work legally?
for the record, again, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Shragi. Unless the legislature made a special provision otherwise, I would say to the extent that the law was in place at the time the taxpayer earned the tax credit, that they would be able to apply the tax credit for activity during the time for which the law was active before it got repealed. It's a bit messy because we're in this potential where a court could invalidate the law if this law is not enacted to sort of replace that. But assuming that this law springs into effect and there's no change to those effective dates, as long as the law was legal and not repealed, activity during that time would result in a tax credit for the taxpayer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, on the list I've got Representative Bynum and Stapp. Also would like to note that we're joined by Representative Johnson. Representative Bynum, you're next.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I guess the bill that we have in front of us does amend the sunset date from 2029 to 2028. I was just hoping to get some clarity on if we're trying to mimic what was done prior to in the bill, why was the sunset changed to begin with? And I'm sorry if it was explained already, but I'm just trying to get clarification. So on page 5, line 17 and 18, we show that there's an amended date for the sunset. I was just looking for clarity on why that was changed.
Ms. Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Senator Kawasaki, Senate Majority Legal Counsel. The amendment that you see before you on the sunset date on page 5 was an attempt to recreate the law that was established in SB 189. There was a bill that became effective before SB 189 that had actually extended the sunset of the whole education tax credit program, which then included the child care program to child care tax program to 2029. But in order to copy exactly what SB 189 put into place, Ledge Legal drafted the 2028 sunset date. So that's why you see a shorter sunset date from a change of 2029.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair to Ms. Neumann. So I think there's a certain practicality in talking about a shortened sunset date that you're kind of missing. The sunset date's effective to the first two in the 21st provision of the bill. Those are clearly cash equipment accepted by child care facilities in the state operated by a nonprofit and attended by one or more children, and of course a payment to employee and the taxpayer made for the purpose of offsetting the employee's child care costs incurred to the state. So like if you were to take an early sunset date, let's say September, you are basically invalidating any effect that this bill would have, because the whole purpose is to have people be able to have tax deductions for the purpose of offering child care. So there would be almost no way that we would know if these provisions would even be effective if we were to, say, set a sunset date. That would be, you know, within 6 months of us passing this bill, given the fact that the current bill is in litigation right now. We don't even know if people are going to take advantage of those because of litigation. So I guess from a practical standpoint, Ms. Neumann, like, if we were to set a, I mean, January 1st of 2028 is 30-something months from now? So I don't see why we would want to do that unless the objective of the committee would be to liquidate the ability to see if these things would even be effective through the chair.
Okay, further questions? Okay. I think trying to find consensus on this is going to be a little challenging. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Do we have anyone from the department still online? Do we know if anyone has applied for these tax credits currently?
Mr. Brandon Spanos with Department of Revenue, do you have an answer?
Yes, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division, Department of Revenue. We don't yet know. The tax returns, the first tax returns were due April 15th. And so if I did a search, I might be able to find a few. But most of the taxpayers pay on extension on October 15th, and that's when we'll see most of the returns for that short period filed per calendar year 2024. As Ms. Nauman stated, taxpayers do have different tax periods, but the majority of them are calendar year taxpayers, and most file either in April or October, again, majority being October. So after October, we would publish our education tax credit report, which we publish annually, that would break down, and we will break out the child care portion in that report.
Okay. Representative Hannon, any follow-up?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I guess I'm thinking that if we are trying to be cautious and change as little as possible, but make sure that we haven't leveraged ourselves into losing millions of revenue that we hadn't intended to, I would look to just change to January of 2026. That gives, in essence, a full year that the credits could have been in place, and if we then saw at the end of this year it really is transformative, we pass a bill again. If, on the other hand, we find that we are losing huge amounts of revenue, we go, this was maybe not the right structure.
We will need to let our conferees go to conference committee in about 7 minutes. We'll go to a question by Representative Bynum, and then I'll get a sense of whether folks would like to maybe sit on this for a few hours while we let folks go to other meetings. Then we can come back and see if we've got thoughts. So, Representative Bynum.
So thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I mean, I'm looking at this as a curing process for a legal matter, and I'm happy to let the law stand as it is by going through that process. And that's whether or not I agree with what was previously passed is a completely different conversation. If we were going to go in and want to substantially change the sunset date, which to me would feel like that's what we'd be doing by moving it back to just 2026, you know, I'd want to have not just time to think about this. I'd want the, you know, a complete presentation on what the intended purpose of this whole law even was, and which would mean that I'd want a full hearing, you know, go through this full process. So I'm comfortable moving forward with a hearing. If there was a sunset date adjustment that was minor in nature, I would be on board with that as well. But to kill, basically effectively kill the bill without understanding why it went through its full process, what its intended purpose was, and understanding what the consequence of killing it would be, I'm not comfortable with doing it at this point. So that's where I'm currently standing, and maybe I can be convinced otherwise. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Great. Thank you. We'll go to Representative Miller. Do you have a comment?
No.
Okay. You're hanging on my every word. I can see it. Senator Wilikowski.
Just to respond, Mr. Chair. And, in a world of unlimited resources, this is a fantastic bill. If I was an employer, I would give every single one of the, a huge employer, every single one of my employees that had a child a cash credit. But this is about managing the state's financial risk. This is a totally open-ended financial tax credit, which we have no idea. It could be $100,000. It could be $100 million for all we know. We have no idea. Every employer in the state should take advantage of this, and I hope they do. I just worry that we can't. How are we going to afford this when we have a $677 million deficit this year? We have a bigger deficit next year. We don't know. We don't know the impacts of this. And I think it's you're the Finance Committee, and you decide what we can afford, not afford. I just don't know that we can afford to set this forward for the next few years and a completely open-ended tax credit that we have no idea what the impact of the state's treasury will be. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bynum, then Stepp. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I was looking a bit through the statute because I was thinking unlimited hundreds of millions of dollars. And I know in the statute it does have a $3 million cap on affiliated groups. And when we're talking about those that are actually paying the paying taxes in the state for this type of tax, I'm just trying to gather on how many affiliated groups we would have that would be able to qualify for $3 million. I mean, this sounds like $3 million, you know, 33 groups that we would be, or affiliated groups that we would be associating with the maximum payout, and I just don't know that there's actually that many in the state. So that's why I would say that if we're talking about something substantial, I'd want a lot more information on why we're how we're invalidating the law and who's actually being impacted. We know that the child care issue is a major, major issue, so I don't want to really, I don't want to fumble around with that without knowing the full consequence.
Representative Stout.
I just reject the notion, Mr. Co-Chair. We looked at this bill last year with the fiscal note regarding the loss in potential revenue. There is a cap on $3 million for individual businesses. Very few entities in the state pay corporate income tax. We don't, hundreds of millions of dollars is not even what we currently net in corporate income tax, and I think most of that everybody understands is from just a handful of giant payers of the corporate income tax structure in Alaska. But I'll remind you that if you were to set a sunset date as early as January, one of the key provisions in the bill allows an employer to make expenditures to operate a child care facility in-state for the children of taxpayers' employees. That the concept is to create on-site employer child care. If you say we're just going to do this until January, no serious business is going to make an investment into building a child care facility because they're going to say, well, if the legislature is only going to offer me this incentive for 6 months, we don't even know, as the revenue testified, if people are taking advantage of it now. If I had a larger business and I saw that something was in litigation, I would be highly suspect to take advantage of it. The purpose of the bill is curing. I think that if there is a major drop in revenue, I don't foresee that, but I'm sure that we could go back and visit that at the time. And again, the current sunset isn't that far away, so I would just encourage the members of the committee that we should at least give the bill time to work as intended. We'll know when the fall revenue source book comes out if there's a dramatic change in corporate income tax loss. Again, I don't foresee that happening. But we passed this bill last year because we all agreed that there's a child care crisis in our state, and this is a really good incentive for businesses to create child care on site. It also works incredibly well with flexible spending accounts at the federal level that allow employees to do payroll deductions pre-tax for the purpose of dependent care. All right, so when you create a state incentive that mirrors a federal incentive for the purpose of employers providing child care, it's probably one of the most productive things that you can do to alleviate a crisis. And I would just encourage the folks in the committee to say, hey, right now, we should probably just leave this bill as it is and see if it actually works. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schrage, and then I'll make some closing announcements. Representative Schrage.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Actually agree with a lot of what the previous member said. I think there was a real need that we were trying to address when we passed this bill last year. I think the price of oil was also substantially higher than it is today, and that has forced all of us to reevaluate some of these actions that we've taken. So I'm going to need a little bit more time to think about this. I know we're going to break, I think, in just a few moments for a conference committee meeting, but hopefully with a little bit of time we can come to some form of consensus here soon. Thank you.
Sometimes the conference committee is, the meetings are pretty quick. I think this meeting is just an organizational meeting. I don't know if any decisions are being made, so it might be a very quick meeting. And then the next meeting is not till 5:15, so it's possible that if they go in for 15 minutes, we could be coming back from recess here in the next half hour, possibly. So maybe let's plan on that. I'm going to go ahead and recess out. Senator Wilkowski, did you have any other comments?
Just one more point, Mr. Sure. Chairman, if I could. This does not just apply to corporate income taxpayers. It applies to seven categories of taxpayers, those paying insurance tax, corporate income tax, oil and gas production tax, and we even have a letter from legislative finance that the oil production companies can go below the 4% minimum with this tax credit. Property taxes, the mining business tax, the fisheries business tax, and fisheries resource landing tax. So it is quite expansive, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. House Finance will recess at 4:21, and we'll send out an email, make some calls to offices if we come back sooner. House Finance recessed. Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of House Finance back to order at 5:05 p.m. I am sorry, I hate to do this, but there is another meeting at 5:15. I think the discussion that is going to need to be had, not only for this bill, but also we still have the other bill, which is the big guy game concession bill after this. Would like to have that discussion and not be rushed. Again, there is a meeting at 5:15. I would hope that would be done by 6:15. It's always possible that it could take a little bit longer. But my intent is to go ahead and recess and then come back again. I think we're also missing somebody, and I think they'd want to be here for the discussion. So with that, I am going to go ahead and recess to the call of the chair, and we'll come back to address HB 95, which is child care tech. HB 96. Thank you. 96, which is child care tax credits, and then also SB 97, which is the big game guide permits program. So with that, we're going to be – it is that time of year. I think there could be a number of these situations. So we'll be recessed at 5:06 p.m., and we'll be called the chair. Okay, House Finance back to order at 6:54 p.m. So we've got two bills. The two bills that we had, we left off at SB 96, which is the child care tax credits. And then we also have before us SB 97, Big Game Guide Permit Program. We don't want to make any rash decisions tonight. We want to move, I guess, a little more incrementally on the SB 96 child care tax credits. Kind of want to just maybe sleep on it. And so I'm going to go ahead and set that bill aside for tonight, and then we'll see if we can maybe talk more about that tomorrow. So we'll jump right over to SB 97. That is the Big Game Guide Permit Program. And for that bill, we've got...
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Bynum.
I just had a procedural question for you.
Sure.
So we've... Right now I've heard that we're setting 96 aside. 96 was set aside. It doesn't... feels like there was maybe some conversations about wanting to try to amend that to where it'll sunset, effectively killing the measure in law. And so what I hear from that is that the reason for doing that was there's concerns about current fiscal situations. And so my question for you was going to be, we just basically under the assumption that what we were doing is we were doing cleanup statutory or doing a cleanup process here to protect the legal process of the actual original bill, and that's what we were doing here. And so when we went through that process, we took 95 up. We said basically this is to protect the legal the bill that passed, and we did that without objection, moved that bill forward. And now what I'm hearing is that we're taking 96 and we're taking a consideration to effectively kill it. And so my question is if that's what we're doing, shouldn't we reconsider what we're doing with 95 and potentially take the same actions for that bill as we are for 96?
Thank you, Representative Bynum. So I think what you're saying is if we're going to do an amendment to 96, then should we do that or could that be done in 95 with a sunset? I guess the discussions that I've had are people are unsure if we should do a sunset or not. It's entirely possible that we decide not to do that, or we do, but I think there's multiple roads we can take in terms of how that's done and what the date might be. And I think folks want more time to kind of explore the options. Representative Shragi, were you wanting to say something?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I guess I would say that as we look at Senate Bill 96, there are some complexities at play ranging from the fiscal impact to some of the provisions that are in the bill that we passed last year that may need to be cleaned up. There's a number of options that are available to us as we move forward. And so rather than commit ourselves to any particular path, we'd like to set Senate Bill 96 aside and continue to, as I understand it, move the other bills forward, recognizing that we do have a number of important bills that are under legal uncertainty due to the lawsuit. And so we want to make sure that those move forward and that the legislation is able to move forward as initially implemented. But with this specific bill, that being Senate Bill 96, we want to take a little bit more time just to get a little more information, understand the issue better, understand the impacts better, and then take it up for action at a future date.
Thank you very much.
Do we have any other questions with regard to 96 before we move to Big Guide Game Concessions? Okay, seeing none. So if we could have staff to Senator Giesel come up, and if you could put yourself on the record. We'll do what we did for the other bills, and that is take the introduction, go to public testimony. We don't have any invited testimony. Review the fiscal notes, and then I'll entertain a motion if it's the will of the committee. So with that, if you could please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Inti Harbison, staff to Senator Giesel. Senator Giesel apologizes for not being able to be here today. SB 97 before you today seeks to implement a constitutionally sound concession program to limit the number of commercial hunting guide operations on state land. The bill seeks to implement a similar program to the concession program that already exists on federal lands with great success. SB 97 seeks to solve the issues surrounding overcrowding, overutilization on state lands. It comes as a result of the Guide Concession Program Work Group, which included a robust public consultation process with guides, residents, stakeholders, and state agencies. This legislation represents a balanced, well-considered approach to address the challenges in commercial big guide hunting on state lands. The passage of this bill would put in place a proven mechanism to improve the quality of hunting on state lands to the benefit of all Alaskans. That concludes my remarks on SB 97, but I am happy to take questions if it is the will of the committee.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Harbison. We'll come back to questions in a moment. We'll do public testimony and fiscal notes. So I'd like to open public testimony on SB 97. That's the Big Game Guide Permit Program. And if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@aklag.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Seeing none. Okay, I'll go ahead and close public testimony on SB 97. One more time, if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@aklag.gov. Also, I'd like to recognize that we have in the audience with us, I believe, Senator Bjorkman back there. Yes, that is him. Thanks for joining us. Let's see here. We'll go over to the fiscal notes. Looks like there are three. Mr. Anderson, could you come up and walk us through the fiscal notes? And then we'll go to questions after that, just so folks know if we have any other specific questions on fiscal notes. We do have the Department of Fish and Game, Ryan Scott, Division of Wildlife Conservation, Joe Fokel, Ledge Liaison, DNR. We've got Diana Leinberger, Division of Mining. And so with that, Mr. Anderson.
For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. Before the committee today is three fiscal notes for SB 97, starting with the Department of Fish and Game, appropriation statewide support services, allocation boards of fisheries and game, OMB component 2048, control code CKILA. This fiscal note is written to reflect that the governor's FY26 requested budget reflects $9,500 of personal service, $2,600 of travel, $2,300 of services, for a total of $14,400. The fiscal note reflects that the department will be required to do some regulation changes if this bill is adopted, and the funds coming from the cost of the $14,400 is reflected in as UGF or unrestricted general funds. Next fiscal note before the committee is the Department of Fish and Game's Wildlife Conservation with the same allocation. OMB component 473, control code BTYHH. This fiscal note reflects the personal services of $112,300, which is the total cost, also reflected in unrestricted general funds for the source of it. And they anticipate the cost of that personal services will come because of the requirement to have an additional wildlife biologist position filled for standing up the new program and then managing the ongoing responsibilities. The final fiscal note before the committee today is from the Department of Natural Resources, the appropriation, fire suppression, land and water resources, allocation, mine, land and water, OMB component 3002, control code FVBNX. This fiscal note is reflected once again in the governor's FY26 governor's requested budget. For personal services, $291,600. $10,000 of travel, $30,000 of services, $10,000 of commodities, for a total operating cost of $341,600. This is reflected from UGF again as the fund source. This has two full-time positions attached to it, and the department has reflected that the change in revenue that this bill might create is indeterminate at the time, and it will require that regs be reviewed. Turning to the second page for that overall cost of $341,600, the two positions are a natural resource manager and a natural resource specialist. And then once again, travel costs, service costs, and commodities are all to initial setup and to stand up those two positions. And then once again, DNR would be required to adopt regulations to implement the hunting guide concession program addressed. Mr. Chairman, that summarizes all three fiscal notes for the committee.
Great. Thank you very much. And so do we have any questions for the sponsor, for any of the departments regarding the fiscal notes? Okay, I don't see any questions. So, Mr. Harbison, any final comments before I entertain? We've got a question, Representative Allard.
I apologize, Co-Chair. You said fiscal notes. This could be any question to open up to. Did you, thank you, and through the chair, did you guys speak to the resident hunters of Alaska and why they were, I see their letter in here, they're very opposed to this bill. Is there more to it than what they just wrote here?
Mr. Harbison?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I don't believe there's anything more than what they included within their letter for what their opposition is. I certainly couldn't speak for them. This bill did not originate with the Senate Resources Committee. I believed it was carried by another member in the other body during the previous legislature. So I'm not familiar with the particulars around the positions and that, and I believe that the department is online to speak to that if you have further questions.
Yeah, is it, I guess, Co-Chair, I have a question. Are we going to rush this through to pass this tonight? Is that what you're looking at doing?
It was the intent, but certainly it's always up to the will of the committee, and if there are substantive questions, certainly happy to hold it over.
I don't know what the entire will of the committee is. I would ask if it is possible if you would consider holding it over. There's a couple people that I'd like to ask a couple questions to that aren't here. And I apologize. I should have been a little bit more informed on this bill coming in front of us. And I don't know if it's just a possibility maybe tomorrow and I can make those quick phone calls and then maybe tomorrow we pass it out or whatever the committee decides.
We do have meetings in the morning and the afternoon. So I've got one question. Was somebody else, did they have their hands up? Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And just for clarity, this bill in front of us here is another one of the cleanup bills from the bill that had previously passed. This is currently in law, and these funds that we're looking at the fiscal note are already budgeted.
I know.
So I'm just wondering what our options would be. I mean, are we looking to deconstruct if we're looking to try to deconstruct a currently passed law, that's what I'm trying to figure out what we're doing. So if we're going to be, for an open conversation, if we're looking to wait, move this, and we're wanting to get additional input from folks,
what would the intention to again.
Be? I'm just trying to understand what the intention would be. I'm not mansplaining anything. I'm asking what is the intention? Are we going to say we're not going to do this?
I think I we're spoke... Not.
We'll take a brief at ease. When we do come back, I'm going to go to Representative Allard, then Representative Schrage. Brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 7:09 p.m. Representative Allard.
Just a brief eddies for just a second.
Oh, sure,
please.
Brief eddies.
Thank you.
Okay, House Finance Background Record, 7:10 p.m. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I don't totally disagree with the bill. That's not my point of asking. There's a couple of individuals I personally want to make a couple phone calls to, just get a little information, not on the record, not bringing them in to testify, so that I just have a little bit more clarity. And then I was just asking you, as co-chair, if you could possibly hold it to tomorrow, and then we could just move it out. I just need a little bit.
Okay.
That's okay.
I don't know if Mr. Thor Tracy, is that the last name? I don't. Just want to make sure. Stacy. Just want to make sure that folks know that he's available also. I don't know, though. I mean, I think you're wanting. You had some other people in mind that you're wanting to talk to, I think. Okay. Representative Shiragi.
No offense.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Appreciate the committee discussion on this issue and recognize that there may be a desire to check in with other stakeholders or resources to get more information on this legislation. That said, we do have a lot of work still before this committee, and the number of days left in this session quickly dwindling. So only speaking for myself and not for other members of the committee, my preference would be that we move this bill along tonight, and if there were a emergent and serious concern that arises after members reach out to whoever their connections may be, we can always explore options for action, whether it's returning it to the committee or dealing with floor amendments. But just given the amount of work we have left and the tight timeline that we have left with this session, my personal preference would be that we keep this legislation moving to address the legal concerns that we have before us and allow for future committee time to be reserved for other bills that are still in front of this committee. Thank you.
Representative Ballard.
That's fine. If we wanted to go ahead and the will of the committee wants to move it up, that's fine.
What is the will of the committee? Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, we should probably just move them both out. Move them all out to the floor. If there's any questions between then and now, there's plenty of time to look it over and explain your case.
Then I would object to the other one.
Okay. Then how about just the game?
Co-Chair Foster.
Representative Shiragi.
Yeah, recognizing maybe the consensus point here before us tonight, I would make a motion, if you're willing to accept it. I would move that Senate Bill 97, Work Order 34-LS0445/alpha, be moved out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Are there any objections? Hearing none. Senate Bill 97, which is 34-LS0445/A, is moved out of House Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if folks can be sure to sign the committee reports. If there is no other business to come before the committee, our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow morning. That's Wednesday, May 14th at 9 a.m., and at that hearing, we've got HB 105, which is the public schools, mental health education. It's public testimony. And then SB 156, the Alaska Commercial Fishing and Ag Bank and Loans Bill. And I don't suspect there's any other bills that will be taken up at that meeting, although anything can pop up under bills previously heard, but it's not my intent to do that at this point. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 7:13 p.m. Thank you.